Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How's it going, Grady Nation? Chris Thomas here. Hope you're having a Grady kind of day. And my guest on this installment of Grady Nation is Dr. Soum Rouquette. He is the co-founder and CEO of the sexual health company, Mystery Vibe. Their goal is to make sexual health easily accessible across different demographic groups. To learn more, go to mysteryvibe.com. Dr. Soum, how are you doing?
I'm very good, and thank you so much for having me.
Now, you earned a PhD in biometrics from the University of Bath. For those who don't know, biometrics, in a very simplistic definition, involves measuring and analyzing people's unique individual behavioral and physical characteristics. What got you interested in biometrics, and what were you able to apply in terms of that knowledge to your current work with Mystery Vibe?
Oh, long story. I've always been very interested in both biology and engineering, and even though I pursued electronics engineering as my fundamental, I focused a lot on the biomedical side of it, working with doctors and trying to build devices which understands and builds upon human anatomy. So my PhD was focusing on iris recognition, which is a biometric where you look at eyes using infrared light and you match people based on their iris characteristics. So I did that for my PhD and postdoc, and that became a little company, which we then sold to an American security company back in, I think, 2009. So a while back. And then I spent some years working on various defense projects on national security here in the UK, and working on ID cards, e-borders, transport security, so various applications of biometrics. And then I wanted to get back to more core biomedical and building medical devices for the healthcare sector. And a topic that I was always fascinated by is how to help recover after major life events like childbirth, menopause, aging, cancer, surgery. And devices offered a really good potential solution compared to medicines with no side effects. So devices have no side effects, whereas medicines generally do. So that's why I wanted to bring my biomedical knowledge back into a different part of human anatomy, namely the urological and gynecological parts, and get together with doctors. And that's how we started Mystery Vibe.
Was a career in academia ever an interest for you, or was the private sector always the route you wanted to take?
That's a good point. I mean, yes, it is, but the research side of it. So I loved my PhD and my postdoc years, and I, you know, really enjoyed being able to research. The challenge of staying in academia is often you don't get enough time to research. Because, you know, obviously you have other things like lecturing and marking. And while those are important, for me, research was what, you know, I would wake up in the morning for and discover new things and find out, you know, something more exciting, interesting, develop something impactful. So I always wanted to be able to do that. And I think the advantage of building a research-centric company is you have that space and time and independence. Like we've been doing this for 9 years now. We had that luxury of, say, a good 10 years to really delve deep, research, work with a wide variety of experts, doctors, pelvic floor therapists, nurses, in across the world, not just in the UK and US, where we predominantly are, but also from Spain, Germany, Australia, New Zealand. So huge variety of input. And we in effect do exactly the same thing as we did before, work on research, do trials, publish papers, but in the home of a startup life where things are very quick, very agile, very lean, you know, you can do things fast and get it into the hands of patients much quicker than either in corporate or academia.
Now, it's just a stereotype, but a lot of scientists, biomedical engineers are perceived as being kind of nerdy and awkward. Growing up, did you have, you know, a lot of romantic encounters? Were you a big romancer? I'm not trying to pry. Yeah. It's just I'm trying to make the connection of, well, your personal experience and your current work.
No, I mean, well, I went to an all boys Catholic school, Irish Catholic, all boys Catholic school. So yeah, no, I did not have any girlfriends till I was 18 and went to uni. Simply because there weren't any girls anywhere around our school. You know, so no, I think that is, and what I work on today is actually much more an aging issue. You know, a lot of what we do is post-childbirth, post-menopause, post-cancer. So more our customers tend to be like 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, but not a 20-year-old. As an example, you know, like they don't need our products. You know, I wouldn't promote our products to a 20-year-old because, you know, in most cases, they wouldn't need it. So I think the value of what we work on dawned upon me as I grew older, as opposed to when I was younger.
Less than 2 years removed from university graduate study, Deloitte, probably the number one consulting firm in the world, hired you. Now, many people strive for a position in that company, and you earned it. What were your feelings going into the job?
I felt incredibly lucky. And, you know, even to this day, and it's been years, like, you know, I joined Deloitte 2008. So it's been 14 years since I had my graduate training scheme. I still, you know, anyone comes to me, friends, kids, who say, you know, I'm thinking of what to do. I've just finished uni. I recommend Deloitte because I had such an amazing experience, both from a learning perspective and making friends for life. It's a really wonderful company to work in. The clients obviously are really what makes a difference. And my focus was public sector, so the UK government, and working with UK government employees, with the civil servants, and how much they care about changing people's lives is, you know, truly rewarding. And I couldn't have been any closer than via a company like Deloitte. So I cherish my days at Deloitte. And I was incredibly lucky because I don't even know how many people apply and how many get in. It's a very small number. So I'm sure I wasn't any brainier than any of the other people who applied. I was just luckier. I think the best thing, and why it makes such a big difference working in a company like Deloitte, is their graduate training scheme, which spans over 3 years, and they do train you a lot, and they take the time, they spend the money, you know, they give you classroom training. So, for example, you could be off for 2 weeks learning about project management in a classroom, and then spending the next 3 months following your manager, learning it on the job. And they would make sure that you had the time and the guidance to learn it properly, and there would be no pressure in the early years to deliver, to be working on your own. You can obviously choose to do stuff on your own, but there would be people looking after you, making sure that you get the best possible training in all the areas, even basic things like how do you write an email, a business email. And coming from a PhD, my work was judged by how long my documents are, which is the opposite of how an effective business email is written, where if you can get the information in 3 lines, then that's a good email. So I had to unlearn a lot of the things I learned in my PhD, but it was a really great and very nice experience going through the training with everybody else who joined, which is literally like being a graduate in a university again, having lots of fun, traveling the world. And and then learning as I grew in my career at Deloitte. So yeah, no, absolutely. Very lucky 7 years.
What is day-to-day life like as a managerial consultant, particularly one that does interface with the public sector and civil servants that are tending to the needs of the public?
So I focused on an area called operations excellence within consulting. What it is looking at an existing process, something quite significant. Let's say a real example is airport security. That was one of my projects. They tend to last very long, so I think that one was a 2-year project. So it was understanding as an outsider going in, like day to day in the beginning, I would literally be walking around airports, runways, going through securities, body scanners, like literally trying everything, noting it down, building a model of what is the current state, then working all of this obviously as a team with the client. What is the ideal state? What is the best in class globally? Looking all over the world, best airports, what do they do better? How can we do that? What can we do better than even the best airports? Then building what is a 2B model, from as is to a 2B, target operating model. And then figuring out the various things that need to be done from a people perspective, training, hiring, process perspective, implementing new processes, and technology perspective. Maybe we need better, faster body scanners, better, faster access control systems, better fences on the perimeter. And how do you then maintain that post go live? How do you make sure that those things stay as good as you build them and don't go back to being deficient? So that's a typical consulting project in my area of being excellent at operating something at scale for a long time. And that's why they tend to be quite long projects.
After Deloitte, you had a few other management consulting positions, including at HSBC. What were, in retrospect, the most fulfilling aspects about all of this work? And how might the skill set you applied as a management consultant be helpful with Mystery Vibe?
So HSBC is a good example. It's also, it was just one of my various projects, like transport. So I worked on a anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing project. So in a way, it was linked to what I did before in terms of counter-terrorism at a high level. But instead of securing airports, I was trying to build systems that would detect financial movements which could be used for terrorism, and then how do you stop it? So they're all interlinked. If you stop the money, you don't even have to fight the bullet. So the ideal way of fighting terrorism. And it was very different. It was much more mathematical, much more business rules based. So the process was still the same. You go in, you look at what is the current state, build as this model, you know, you look at the best case scenario of anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing in the world, build a target operating model, then figure out the people, process, technology that needs to be built and changed in order to achieve that and maintain that over many years. So I think from a fulfilling perspective, I would say all my projects, because they were very long, you know, Friendship BC was another 2 years, they are very satisfying when they are complete and you can see it in action and you can see the real world application of it day to day. And you know that many potential attacks have been stopped. So I would say all my projects, because the end game was the same, are equally rewarding.
What was the pressure like? Because this sounds like very intense work.
I think because these things take time, you know, and it's one of those things where I love doing long, thorough projects, you know, where you delve deep and you figure it out, you build it all the way, and you only leave when it's fully up and running and perfectly tested post go live, right? So because none of them were instant things, you know, nothing was going to happen overnight, they were good, stable, well-planned projects. And I think that's another advantage of working in a really well-managed firm like Deloitte is I haven't, at least in my career, I didn't have many times when we were rushing through things, because it's when you rush through things that you make mistakes. And at least in my space of defense and security, you can't afford to make mistakes. So I was very lucky that we had structure, well-managed structure from the top. And that allowed us to do things properly, which is, you know, a big part of what I have learned with Mystery Vibe is you can only achieve big things in the medical world if you have patience, structure, and you're willing to give it time. And, you know, you're not rushing anything. Because if you try to rush, let's say, you know, one of the areas we work with, erectile dysfunction, if it doesn't do anything, if we create a device and it doesn't help with erectile dysfunction, then what's the point, right? There's no one in the world, no doctor in the world would recommend it. So you can rush it out, you can, you know, get it done in 1 year and then get it out. But if it doesn't work, it's pointless. So so I think the biggest lesson from there was, you know, you plan ahead, you plan for contingencies, you assume things will take longer, cost more than you plan, but with one goal and one goal only, that you would only launch when it's fully ready and it is worthy of being the new thing on the block.
Now, if I have this right, you co-founded Mystery Vibe in May of 2014, but we're still working with HSBC until December of that same year. Were you unsure of whether Mystery Vibe was going to take off, or was there another reason for holding both positions at the same time?
So this is a good question, because you know, like I was saying, we and when I say we, you know, as consultants, as a team, we would never leave anything till we have delivered it completely. And it was the same with HSBC. And I actually wanted to start a year before, like in 2013, but I was midway through the project I was working on, and I would not feel right to leave it till it had gone live and had tested it, and it post go live, it was perfect. So I waited till I was happy and everybody else was happy that this is done, it's ready, it, you know, it is live, it is working perfectly, and then I could leave. So I left in December of that year.
Now, I know the mission statement of Mystery Vibe is to make sexual health accessible to all. But what was the moment that made you decide that it was necessary to start this company?
long time ago, maybe 2008 is when I can remember talking about this topic of, you know, how do you keep mystery into a in a relationship for a long time after childbirth, after menopause, after cancer, like all of these big things in life, which affect sexual health inevitably for all of us. Which is where the name came from. How do you, you know, keep mystery in the bedroom? And I, you know, talked about it with my friends, everybody, or my colleagues, and often, especially on projects when we lived in hotels, a lot of the discussions were about relationships and struggles, especially in long-term relationships, after kids, sexless marriages. Like, how do you tackle those things? And because my background was engineering and biomedical, I always thought of it from my lens. Is there something we can do to help from an engineering perspective? Because obviously there are medicines and there are other treatments, but one, at least back then, 10 years ago, no one talked about it. But two, what if we could create things which didn't have any side effects so people were more willing to try them? And making it very accessible as well, you know, whether it's accessible from a pleasure perspective in the sense that it's very friendly, it's very fun, and you can talk about it with your partner as a gift, not necessarily as a problem solver. Also accessible in terms of you don't need to go to special shops, you can just go online and discreetly buy it, and it gets delivered to your house in a brown box with nothing on it. Accessible in terms of how can you get medical devices on say FSA, HSA, how can you get them in a reasonable price, and all of it, and also just usability. How do you make it super friendly for users? Big buttons, rechargeable with USB wires, like very, very simple products which you just take it out of the box, turn it on, and that's it. Nothing, no hassle. So, you know, accessible in every way. That's what we set out to do.
Now, in talking about this idea, were friends and family supportive? What was the reaction like?
I am very lucky. I live in London. It's one of the most liberal cities in the world, I think, and especially having lived in many cities. I think, well, the short answer is it was very easy, because in London, anything goes. People are extremely open-minded. It's a potpourri, you know. There's like, I think 75-80% of Londoners are foreigners. People somehow end up in London, many of them, and they just fall in love with the city, like me, and live a very welcoming life where anyone walking the streets is assumed to be a Londoner, and you would ask directions from anyone. So I think it is pure luck that I had a super easy time. Even 10 years ago, when I told my boss, told, you know, all my friends that, you know, I'm going to quit my corporate job and start a company in sexual health. And not only that, I mean, they were very supportive. They shared their experiences. They said, oh, you know, if you can solve this, this would be amazing for us. And many of them said, you know, when you raise money, I would love to invest. Whatever the amount was irrelevant, but the fact that they just believed in it, they believed in this problem needing solving, and it's something that they personally affected by, meant that they're willing to spend their own personal money to back it. So, yeah, no, I was super lucky to have everyone very supportive.
So there are no challenges then in funding Mystery Vibe as an initial venture?
There were no challenges initially, because we funded it initially by ourselves. But the challenge comes for later stage scaling. So when it comes to early stage scaling, I think this applies to any company, it's generally friends and family, you know, or your self-capital. And then after that, angel investors, which tend to be, again, friends or friends of friends. So I think when it comes to that, the challenge might be more how many people trust you as a business person. It's because they're really investing on trust, rather than the sector. I think at that, or the product, I think at that point, it's really the person and the persons, the founders, is all investors invest in. So to a point, the industry or the product is irrelevant. I think where the challenge comes with the sexual pleasure particularly is when it is institutional or VC funding. And that's where it gets very tricky, or particularly in pleasure, it used to be very difficult with vice clauses. Things are definitely improving. I see more VCs funding sexual pleasure and sexual health, but it still has a long way to go.
And Mystery Vibe products are geared around vibration. A lot of sexual health issues are tied to lack of blood flow within parts of the body through vibratory stimulation. The hope is that blood flow will increase in the specific area and help improve not just sexual pleasure, but also reducing pain. How did you get immersed in this research and learn more about the effect of vibratory devices?
So this is where our chief medical officer, Professor Prakar Dasgupta, who's the head of urology at King's College London, this is really his expertise. So he's been working on vibration in various things over the last 30, 35 years. He worked on applying vibration to help with urine, help with peeing for people who couldn't pee properly. So, and that was over 30 years ago. So, and he pioneered robotics in UK, in urology. So he's a big fan of engineering in medicine. And there's a lot of literature. So over 100 years of literature in the application of vibration for sexual dysfunction. So there's a big clinical paper by Mayo Clinic, which documents this 100-year literature on the various applications which are clinically proven on the application of vibration for both arousal and blood flow, pain relief. So what we relied on, apart from professors' knowledge, was the established medical literature. So we could ride on that and then focus our work on delivering the right frequencies at the right points. So what we don't do is try to prove medical literature, because that would take decades. What we do is much more on the biomedical engineering side, where we take existing clinical literature, which has been proven, and then we try to make the best delivery of vibration possible and the best usability. So really our focus is motors, frequencies, material science, flexibility, adaptability, and then ergonomics, usability. So that's the area we work on the most, to create devices which adapt to different body shapes, different genitals, and deliver the right frequencies.
Products are developed in-house. What is the research and development process like?
Yes, so we do everything in our labs in Surrey, which is very near London, around 30 minutes by train. We have a very big lab where we do all of our plastics, our materials, our PCB printing, PCB making, 3D printing, plastic etching, silicone overmolding. So we do everything, firmware development, software. So we do everything in-house. And then we build the first few hundred units in our lab. And then when we are happy that it is ready to be mass produced, then we send it to our contract manufacturer in Hong Kong, a medical factory who makes it in bulk.
Now, when testing the products, how do you obtain human subjects willing to participate?
So our testing is done by a hospital. So most of it is done by a hospital in Spain who have a setup focused on the application of vibrators for sexual dysfunction. So they're quite a specialist clinic. And so that is it's the easiest one. We do trials with different hospitals, like with NHS here in England, and private clinics, but those are more ad hoc, where they might be interested in a certain device in a certain setting. But all of our test devices go through the clinical studies in the clinic in Spain, which are the world experts on vibrators for sexual dysfunction.
Why is sexual health so closely tied to quality of life?
Sexual health is one of the biggest things that suffer as we age, and quality of life is often the thing that is missed out when we talk about longevity. So often the focus when it comes to longevity is adding years to our life. You know, how can we live till 70, 80, 90, 100? So how can we add more years to our lifespan? But what is often missed out is how can we add life to our years? So instead of living till 100 and being bedridden for 10 years, you know, can we jump around and run around and be happy all the way, you know, till the last day? So our focus is very much the latter, is how can we add life to years? And sexual health is one of the biggest health topics that gets affected as we age, almost inevitably, like with pain, dryness, erection, arousal, and all of these are generally aging-related issues. Menopause is very much an aging issue. Erection is very much an aging issue. Dryness is very much an aging issue. So yes, they can happen earlier, but normally, like an average menopause would be 50 years or 50 plus. So 10% more men get ED every 10 years after 40, for example. So the quality of life keeps decreasing as we age. And a big part of how to improve that quality of life as we age is to improve sexual health.
Despite the importance of sexual health, why might it be seen as something worth keeping private in many parts of the world, in many cultures?
I think it's okay.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
To keep sexual health private, it's okay if people want to be discreet about it. It's okay if they don't want to talk about it. I think what is important is, even within that setting where people want discretion, people want privacy, things are easily available, whether it's information or solutions. And that's our goal, is making it accessible. Is you don't have to make your sex life private, public, right? There's no need. You can keep it as private as you want. But things that are or might be inaccessible before, hopefully, is less inaccessible now. And you have more information, you have more helpers, you know, guides to start conversations with each other, and more solutions, more tools to address whatever the thing that you're trying to address. So I think there's nothing wrong with sexual health being private for a person, which is totally fine. But as long as the information and the solutions are very easily accessible, then we are in a good place.
But I can see where you're coming from, in that people might not want to divulge their personal circumstances. But, you know, if overall there's just a general climate that sexual discussion is taboo, can that information even be accessible?
Yes, I think, and also you're very right in saying it does differ significantly in different parts of the world. And so I'm sure, you know, what is very easily accessible in London or New York, either from media or literature or, you know, even friend circle, is probably very difficult to access in Middle East. So, and I think it goes back to the point of how do we make this information, the solutions, the access easily accessible at a public level. And I think a easy way, and I say easy because it's relatively easy, way is through the medical community, because it's much easier for someone. Let's say, you know, my sister lives in Dubai. So I know I visit every few months, and I have been for the last 20 years. And I understand the world of Dubai and the contrast with London quite well. So if we want to spread information about sexual health solutions in Dubai, I would go through their medical channels, through their urologists, through their pharmacies, because it would be very challenging if I tried to do a marketing campaign on TV, for example, right? So I think the solution, because we are always looking for solutions to problems that exist, often societal change is not instant. So we try to work within the restrictions that exist in order to bring about change, because that's a good step in the direction of bringing about large-scale change is with baby steps. So in this case, in the case of Dubai, a good example would be having a relationship with a big pharmacy chain, training their staff on what various solutions exist for pelvic pain, menopausal dryness, erection, working with the authorities, getting the right documentation and approvals, and then being able to roll that out nationwide through the pharmacies, so that anyone coming to the pharmacies can have, or online, can have access to the information and the products. So no, you're absolutely right that there is significant challenges in making sexual health and sexual wellness content and solutions accessible in different parts of the world. But I think we can go in baby steps and get there slowly.
Mystery Vibe products have won various awards: European Product Design Award, Campaign Creative Tech Award, a Good Housekeeping recognition. I didn't know Good Housekeeping magazine gave out recognition for devices of this type, but that's good to know. What does it feel like receiving recognition from so many different groups and organizations for your work?
For us, it's essential. Because of the industry we're in, I think often awards may be seen as a vanity metric. But the reason why we focus on awards and applying to so many of them is because it's the credibility that it brings to the sexual wellness and health industry, which historically were not seen as the center of product design or the center of high quality products. And to change those perceptions, having awards like Red Dot, IF, like you said, European Design and Good Housekeeping, makes a massive difference, because people recognize these logos. They know that other kind of products which have won these awards, like I remember Design Week, which is one of the biggest design awards, we were up against Apple Watch and we beat them. So we were first in Design Week in 2019, and Apple Watch was second. So that's the kind of stuff which hits headlines, at least in the product design world, and it creates the credibility that you would not expect for a sex device.
Is it in a way a form of marketing the brand, in that, okay, there's a lot of credibility tied to these awards, and it enhances the awareness of the products in a way that perhaps you wouldn't get the same value if you were to do a spend on television or on the internet?
I think the calculation of return on investment is quite challenging when it comes to awards. So we see them more as credibility building. Whereas if we spent the same money or time, often this is time, on, let's say, a digital marketing ad like Facebook, we would make more money as a return, but that doesn't have the lifetime credibility of, say, a Red Dot Design Award. So I would say it's more credibility building, which spans across. So, you know, it is important for customers, investors, doctors, media, everybody benefits from that credibility, as compared to other forms of marketing like TV or Facebook.
Now, your graduate training, as we talked about, is in biometrics, not explicitly business or leadership. How would you describe your leadership style?
And this is such a good reason why I loved my 7 years at Deloitte, is because when I finished my postdoc, I knew nothing about management, nothing about leadership, nothing about accounting, business, like any of that. And I don't think I could have built Mr. Vibe without the 7 years of management training. So I learned a lot from the ground up, you know, being the junior most person in the room to being often the senior most by the time I left. And I think my style of leadership is very hands-on, because I'll always be an engineer, you know, no matter how old I get. For me, it's bringing the two pieces together. On one side is the user, whether it's the patient, the doctor, the consumer, and on the other side is the technology, what can be built to deliver the right experience. So that's really where I focus most of my time on, is understanding the users and building the technology. And I like to, and we're very small, we're only 15 people. So I like to leave people to do their own thing. I always believe that I would only hire people who love to be independent, who want overall direction, but not day-to-day management. And we're lucky enough that we are small enough and we don't have to have managing people as our main job. And everyone in the team is self-driven, self-motivated people who just love having their freedom to do the role that they love doing.
How do you keep that balance of being passionate about the research and the product and, you know, avoiding perfectionism or micromanagement? Is it possible to make sure you're not going a little bit overboard in terms of your level of involvement, or is that problem?
It is. So no, you're absolutely right. So what we try to do is we assume the first time we have a product ready for testing, and ready for testing is a very important point, because often it takes a year for a product to be safe for anyone to test. So we just assume it in our project plan, our timelines, our budget, and managing expectations of investors, customers, etc., that it's not going to work. That's the assumption. And by not going to work, I mean from a medical efficacy point of view, not as a product. I'm sure, you know, the product itself will work, it will turn on and it will do stuff, but, you know, it probably wouldn't be effective to solve whatever it is that we set out to solve. So we just assume that. And in 9 out of 10 cases, that is true. Sometimes, again, you know, if we're super lucky, you know, it might work the first time, but it really doesn't, really happens. So with that assumption, it's more manageable that, okay, you know, it will take us, say, 9 months to get to that point. Then it will take us another 9 months to get to the next testable version. And then, you know, maybe we give ourselves another 4 to 8 months, so we get to 24 months, and then we are ready to send a product out that we're happy with. So what we do is we basically give ourselves a 2-year window to launch a new product, having the experience of the last 9 years and the foundations. Before, it would be even longer, would be 3, 4, 5 years, even some of our products took 5 years to launch. So it's less now, but at the end of the day, it really needs to be effective for the problem we're trying to solve to a certain percentage, 60, 70, 80%. It needs to be effective. Otherwise, it's not worth launching. It's not ready. So I guess in a way, the balance between trying to get perfection and getting something out is less of a challenge in medical, because we need to, these are numericals, like it will go through a study and we'll get a result of how many people, what percentage of the people it worked for. And if it didn't work for, and we set a number, let's say we set 75% or 80%, and that's the number we need to reach. If we didn't, we'll get the super valuable feedback on what needs to be done to get there. And then we'd go back to the drawing board and update the product, rebuild the tools, do it again. And in 6-9 months, we would be back to do the testing again. So that's kind of the process, which again goes back to like the projects I used to have at Deloitte, like really have the time, assume things will take longer, have the budget, do it properly. And yeah, we still follow that.
The following question is not meant in any way to be a critique. It's just trying to get your thoughts. So I know a lot of research, development, time, and effort goes into getting these products out available on the market. But, Crescendo 2 costs $187, Poco $134, Legato $172, Tenuto 2 $209. And so my question is, if someone says that the goal is accessibility, might the price point of these products be a bit too high to get in the hands of the people that need it the most?
Correct. I agree with you completely. And it's a constant goal for us. How can we create more affordable products? So there's two things to it. One is volume. So, we are small, so we don't really build massive products in production. So we might build a 5,000 or a 10,000 production line, not a 100,000 or a million. So as we scale, our costs will go down, and then we can pass on the cost. At the moment, it's really just the cost of production of medical devices is very high, and especially with components, supply chain, etc. So often the solution is scaling. The economy scale, make it much cheaper. And as we scale, then we can pass on the cost, and it will, so hopefully in a few years, they can be half the price of what they are now. But where the challenge we have is because we are so small, our volumes are very small, and we manually check every single product to make sure, nothing goes out which is not fully tested. So we don't want to sacrifice on the quality, which is the way we would be able to reduce the cost, is if we reduced our QA or if we reduced our component quality, which means it might still last the 2 years. So we give 2 years, no questions asked warranty. And these are things that matter in the medical world. They matter less so in the consumer world, but because most consumer devices come with 1 year warranty. But it's like a simple example is battery life. The higher quality, the more expensive the battery, the many more charge discharge cycles it can last. And the battery is normally the first thing to go in a consumer product. So if you have a 2-year warranty and the battery dies at the end of 2 years, then yes, legally you're okay, you've done your job, but it means it is pretty much useless at the end of the 2 years. Whereas if we spend, say, double what would be a normal battery, we might get a battery which will do 1,000 more charge discharge cycles and last an extra year. So it is it's more about quality assurance component, and you know, the quality of the silicon. So it's how high the quality can be, and that ends up adding up the costs, especially at low volumes of manufacturing, and hand-checked every single one, which then inevitably makes the product more expensive.
Now, in a ideal world with the impact of celebrity and influencer marketing, given that your products are targeting an older demographic, are there any celebrity pitch people that you think would be great to get the word out about Mystery Vibe products? In a hypothetical situation, you know, which handful of celebrities do you think would do a great job of getting the word out about Mystery Vibe products?
I really like what's been happening in the, say, past 2 or 3 years, where more celebrities have been talking about sexual wellness and sexual health on their platforms, reaching tens, hundreds of millions. And it is so massively valuable, especially to our earlier discussion about how do you make the information content, the tools publicly accessible, available. And I think having big celebrities talking about it is one of the fastest way to make it happen. What celebrities would we want to talk about? For us, really, the influencers are our doctors, because we come at it from a very medical angle. So even though the doctors are not famous celebrities, they are very highly regarded, both by their patients and other doctors. And when doctors talk about real scenarios where their patients benefited and the quality of life changed, they could have sex with their partners again without pain, they could, you know, have erections again, I think that makes the biggest difference when it comes to the credibility and both marketing and people trusting that, compared to if we could hire a celebrity to do marketing for us. I think it would definitely reach more people, but it would seem more commercial than a doctor talking about a patient experience.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it in terms of that, you know, growth at scale component, because I mean, you know, if Oprah Winfrey were to say, hey, you know, this Crescendo 2 did wonders for my health, I mean, I think Mystery Right. Vibe would be rolling in the dough, and there would be no worries about the cost of each product because it would be at a scale where so many people are buying it. And so it yes, does become
yes. No, you're absolutely right.
A tough question, because you do want to present yourself as an authentic, credible product that does help people. It does work. It's effective. But is the message coming from a doctor going to resonate with enough people that you can grow at scale? So it is a kind of a quandary.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I think the key thing is genuineness. If it's a big celebrity who genuinely benefits, you know, like great example, Oprah, if let's say if she's struggling with menopause, dryness, and she finds out about Crescendo from wherever, and you know, it benefits her, and then she talks about it, then it's massively valuable. I think the key is it has to be genuine. It has to be something, you know, either her or someone close to her actually benefited from. What I don't think would have as much impact if it were a sponsored post where, you know, we paid someone to say something, because I think people see through that. So, yes, no, you're absolutely right. If if we got a massive celebrity like Oprah genuinely benefiting from our products and talking about it, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, and Kim Kardashian demonstrating how to use a Poco. I think
absolutely.
Do wonders.
Yeah.
I agree.
Totally.
With the accessibility aspect, what are your thoughts on helping people with various disabilities, blindness, being paralyzed, etc.?
Very, very good point. Very important point as well. So we've, a part of what we do with feedback from our users, especially of the version ones of our products, is particularly look for people with disabilities like dexterity, finger disability, like not being able to press buttons easily, or visual difficulties. And, you know, like version twos have raised buttons, better symbols, more easier accessibility with the product, better guides. And on the other hand, the accessibility from aging, something as simple as charging, for example, version one of our Crescendo 2 product had wireless charging, and it was really complicated for a lot of people because wireless charging still hasn't taken off fully. So we actually downgraded the technology from wireless to USB because it was simpler for a lot of people who just are not used to wireless charging and placing it exactly on the right place. So a lot of what we do is try to simplify things, make it bigger. Like a lot of people said, they don't want to use the app in the bedroom, whether they don't like it, or they find it challenging, you know, setting up the app, connecting to Bluetooth, whatever. But they said, we like the remote function. So we made a physical remote with big buttons, so people can use that instead. Then talking about spinal injury, one of the organizations we work with is Sex and Spine. And talking same about the remote again, we created that with them to be able to control three vibrating devices at the same time, so we could deliver the same frequency at the same time to three different points in order to create local loops. So let's say one vibrator is on the breasts trying to stimulate the erogenous zones, which is still connected to the brain, whereas the other is on the genitals and is not connected to the brain because of spinal injury, but the local loop then infers that arousal and creates arousal. So it is it's a lot of research. Obviously there's a lot more work to be done, but the spinal injury piece is a big piece that we are still working on.
Now I'm just thinking about the products and how they might be perceived by various demographics. Is there a bit of resistance from male users regarding the usage of vibrating devices? Have you seen that, encountered that? Because there might be this perception that, well, vibrating devices are for women.
No, surprisingly, that's a very good idea. Good point, because it is I think there is a perception externally, but what we find is most of our customers are men, and they...
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yes, and they buy both the ones which are male genital products, but equally they buy the female ones as gifts for their partners, because at the end of the day, the goal is still the same, is how do you improve your bedroom? How do you improve your intimacy? How do you reconnect with your partner? How do you bring sex back into the bedroom? So if that is the goal, often men buy like a device like Crescendo, which is designed for vaginas and pelvic pain and arousal, they would buy that as a gift for their partner to restart that discussion, to say, hey, you know, I found this. This is doctor designed, doctor recommended. Let's try it. And that seems to be much more the reason for buying, rather than often as compared to women buying it for themselves.
Have there been particular pieces of feedback from users that really stick out to you and make you feel good?
Oh, so many. And that's the reason. That's the reason we do all of what we do. I remember one, which was a lady who had hysterectomy, and she had pain, she had dryness, and her, I think maybe 10, 6, 6, 7 years later, a long time later, her doctor, she went to a doctor and the doctor recommended Crescendo and she used it. And then she could feel, like in her words, feel like a woman again. And, you know, like it's stuff like that. And then I remember one from a couple, a retired couple in the 60s, they said they hadn't really had sex for, I don't know, decades. After discovering Crescendo from a newspaper article, they tried it and they felt like a young couple in their honeymoon again. So, you know, it's these, then I remember one, which was a person who had colorectal cancer, had surgery, couldn't get erect, was very young in his 40s, wanted to have kids, but was struggling, and then used Tenuto and could get erect again, and his wife was pregnant after that. So, you know, it's just so many, and it's so many facets, so many ages, so many different things. And every one of them is a significant quality of life change. And that is really what we do for.
What does the future hold for Mystery Vibe? And is this something that you see yourself doing the rest of your life?
Well, at least the next, say, 5 years, we have a very busy roadmap of lots of devices we want to launch, lots of medical trials we want to run, lots of user feedback we want to get, and, you know, obviously get it into the hands of many, many people. So that's for the near future. The long-term future, I am looking forward to technologies like graphene, miniaturization of electronics, and miniaturization of battery technology, like system on chip. The goal, one of the design principles I follow very strongly is enchanted objects. It's an MIT design principle which says make technology so small and so invisible that people think products are magic. Yeah, so like a Harry Potter broom, you know. So enchanted objects is the principle that I love a lot in my product design. And one of the things we want to do is make all our technology fit into a condom, for example. And the reason for that is it would mean you can live your sex life or, you know, engage in activity with your partner without even thinking about it. There's nothing in between you and your partner apart from a small condom. I think that is still maybe 10 years away, but it is not far. It is, you know, in our lifetimes, we will get there where technology is so small that we will be able to make those magical objects. And yeah, that's what I look forward to, you know, the next 10 years. Whether I would do it for life, as of right now, I can't think of anything else more rewarding than what we do, you know, reading those customer feedback, for example. But I am sure I'll reach a point where there will be people better than me to run Mystery Vibe. There'll be people with better ideas, better execution. And when that day comes, I would be the first person to hand over to somebody else who can do a better job than me.
Well, Dr. Sumru Kit, hopefully that time is not soon. It sounds like you're incredibly passionate about this and you're doing good work for a lot of people. Folks, if you want to learn more about Mystery Vibe, go to mysteryvibe.com. There's a whole bunch of product descriptions and a listing of the various scientific aspects tied to the products. It's quite interesting. Great A Nation, take care. We'll see you next time.